Healthcare is too expensive. Employers are offsetting costs onto their employees. Who will make health benefits affordable for hardworking Americans and their families?
You will! This is the Empowering Plans Podcast, a show dedicated to helping you once again emphasize the benefits in your benefit plan. Now prepare to learn,
plan,
save,
and protect with the FIA Group.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Empowering Plans. My name is Brian O'Hara. I am an attorney in the Provider Relations Department. And with me today is Kelly Dempsey, Vice President of Consulting. Kelly, how are you today?
I'm doing good. It's a lovely spring gray day here in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yes,
but it was actually sunny for the eclipse. So that was a win. We were all really nervous that it was going to be cloud covered for the eclipse. And there were definitely some clouds, but it was still visible. And it was honestly way more cool than I had ever anticipated. And I'm really happy that I was in the path of totality.
Well, I'm actually here in the Louisville office today. And it's also kind of gray and gloomy here today. But it is April, which means it's spring, which means that baseball is back. And I couldn't be happier because my Sox are off to a surprising start. I don't know how sustainable it's going to be, but I'm riding the wave while we can. Kelly, I think your Guardians are doing pretty well as well.
I believe Adam said the other day that they have the best record in baseball. I don't know if that's true today as it was on Monday, but maybe it is.
Great. Well, I mean, I'm happy because, you know, baseball is really, I would call it essential to my health, really. And, you know, this just kind of reminds me, in the worst segue in the history of all time, about essential health benefits. So Kelly and I are going to talk to you today about essential health benefits. So just as a brief overview, the Affordable Care Act requires non-grandfathered health plans in the individual and small group markets to cover certain essential health benefits, EHBs, and their items and services in certain benefit categories like ambulatory patient services, emergency services, hospitalization, etc. Each state is required to designate a standard benchmark plan for their essential health benefits. Self-funded plans previously were not required to have a benchmark plan. However, it's always been the advice of FIA that plans should indeed select a benchmark plan. And Kelly, if I'm not mistaken, as of 2015, self-funded plans actually are required to have a benchmark plan. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was hidden in the final rules published way back in November of 2015. There was a footnote of all places that kind of specifically referenced the fact that a self-funded plan needs to select a benchmark. But the good news is it can be any benchmark. And then there's technically, I think there's 51 because there are one for every state, plus there's one for Washington, D.C. So there's actually 51 benchmarks to choose from.
Excellent. You know, my torts professor in law school always said, you have to check the footnotes. That's just, you know, if you don't check the footnotes, you can miss a lot of very important information.
Funny that you say that because I actually had a torts professor that hinged a question on one of our tests about a footnote to a case. And if you didn't read the footnote, you would have never known the answer to the question. So it's funny that it was the torts professors that do that. But I also had the same experience with my torts professor in the footnotes that he hid something or a question based on what was in there. And it's definitely crucial. It's one of the reasons why us lawyers look at all those nitty gritty little details.
So. Yes. Aren't we annoying? Well, back to EHBs. You know, so what is the purpose of picking a benchmark? Well, the purpose of selecting a benchmark is solely for the purpose of identifying which benefits are essential health benefits and which are not. So a self-funded plan is not required to mirror the benchmark plan selected in terms of benefits and or visit limitations. In other words, the self-funded plan does not have to cover all the benefits that are in the benchmark, and it can pick different visit limitations or impose visit limitations that are not in the benchmark. They can pick any benchmark that they like, so it doesn't necessarily have to be the state in which the plan is located or, you know, in which the company is located or anything of that nature. Kelly, do you want to talk a little bit about how a plan can pick a benchmark?
Yeah, so there's definitely a few considerations, and it's kind of one of those, you look at it from the reverse. You kind of look at your benefits of where you have now and what makes sense for your health plan and see where you might have had dollar limits and then kind of try to find a benchmark that aligns with that. That was kind of like the reverse process. And you know, again, it's one of those situations where we see a lot of employers and plans picking Utah because it was one of the most plan-friendly benchmarks way back in, you know, the beginning of the ACA when things first started back in 2014, 2015. Things have changed over time, and we'll get to that in a little bit, but that was one of the main considerations. We definitely still see some plans, especially those that are maybe non-ERISA plans like cities and school districts, mirror the benchmark of the state they are in, just because in their view, it's a little bit more competitive with what other employers are likely doing in that state. So if they're in New Jersey, they pick the New Jersey benchmark. Again, it's not required, but that has been a trend that we have seen with a lot of non-ERISA plans. But your focus is really, if you have certain cost containment measures and benefit structures based on what you know is utilized and where you need to control costs, you want to find a benchmark that agrees with you on what is an EHB and what is not an EHB. Otherwise, you will have to remove those dollar limits.
Great. Well, that makes sense. Now, it's my understanding that there were some new FAQs released recently that speak to essential health benefits. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, Kelly?
Absolutely. I'm so happy to talk about this. Yes, we have now had FAQ number 66 issued as of April 2nd last week. So it's definitely been a wild ride. We've had three new sets of FAQs in 2024 alone. So 64, 65, and 66 have also come out. 66 is really one of these FAQs where it says a lot, but it doesn't really say a lot. So the moral of the story is with respect to FAQ 66 is it specifically talking about the rules applicable to the fully insured, non-grandfathered, individual, and small group plans. And there's also the hint in there that the agencies intend to create proposed rulemaking to apply to the large group market as well as self-funded plans. And the reasons why they distinguish between these kind of four different segments of plans, individual, small group, large group, and self-funded, is because those are how a lot of the rules are structured under the ACA. Over time, there are certain rules under the ACA that in the self-funded space you may have never encountered because they only apply to either the full insured small group market or individual market or potentially the full insured large group market. So that's where the distinction comes in and why they're so, I guess, directed in such a specific way. It's a little weird that they would come out with rulemaking for one set and not the other. But I think if I'm reading between the lines, the way I interpret this is one of the things that the regulators are trying to do without coming out and saying it directly is that they're trying to fix the potential conflicts that we have seen over the last, you know, more than 10 years, almost 15 at this point, the conflict between state mandated benefits and state laws related to certain benefits and the ACA rules that prevent the federal rules that prevent dollar limits on lifetime and annual dollar limits and certain benefits, the EHBs. So I think that's what they're trying to reconcile. They're trying to reconcile the rules that apply at the federal level with what the states have already potentially done or are continuing to do. So it's a little wonky, it's a little weird, but basically what this FAQ has said is that those plans, those fully insured individual and small group plans, are required to treat prescription drugs that are covered by the plan in excess of what is on the benchmark. They're required to consider those prescription drugs also benchmark benefits at that point. So no lifetime or annual dollar limits, unless the coverage of the drug is subject to a state mandate. That's the way it's written. That's the rule. Again, it's a little confusing, but again, I think what they're trying to do is fix that conflict between state mandated benefits and state dollar limits on their benefits with the federal rules. So they're trying to reconcile those things.
Yeah. A little I mean, it's clear as mud to me. I don't know about you.
It is definitely weird. And, you know, it's one of those things that, again, it says a lot without saying a lot. I think in a more practical application, you know, historically we have seen in some cases the EHB as a essential health benefit definition includes prescription drugs. However, there's been some loose interpretations over time that if a specific type of benefit is not considered a EHB, that the prescription drugs associated with that type of treatment or benefit would also not be an EHB. So I think the one example that I can recall, you know, discussing at some point was like fertility benefits, any sort of prescription drugs that would be associated with fertility benefits. So if the state says that the fertility benefits are not an essential health benefit, the plans have kind of interpreted that the prescription drugs associated with that infertility benefit would also not be EHBs and potentially might be subject to dollar limits. It was one of those things where I was kind of towing the line of the interpretation of the rules. You know, FIA has always kind of taken a very conservative approach and said that prescription drugs are prescription drugs. The EHB says prescription drugs are an EHB. We don't recommend dollar limits on any prescription drugs. That was kind of our very narrow, very conservative approach to these rules. And we've seen, obviously, plans get creative and try to, you know, toe the line of what makes sense. So I think this is, again, it's reconciling the interpretations that we've seen out in the industry, as well as what's happening at the state and federal level, trying to reconcile those things, which is interesting.
Now, if anybody wants to read these FAQs on their own, this is available on the Department of Labor website, I believe.
Yes, I think it's on the EBSA website specifically. All 66 of them are on there. They've got their little stars and caveats related to which ones have overruled or modified other ones. So it's important to also talk about what else has changed in the EHB space over time. This is definitely something that has been fluid ever since the essential health benefit rules were issued and started applying way back in 2014. Every couple years, states would reassess their benchmark plans. And as of 2020, the way that states adjust their benchmarks plans has changed, but it doesn't change the fact that they are still changing and modifying over time. So if you picked Utah way back in 2014 or even 2017, which is kind of one of the older iterations, that benchmark back in 2017 could be very different than it is now. I did specifically look at Utah just because that's what we said is one of those plan favorable states that we have looked at historically. In a line by line comparison, I only saw one benefit that was not an EHB back in 2017 that is now an EHB, and that was nutritional counseling. I have a lot of theories on why that is, but that one is definitely flipped. It's potentially, related to the preventive care requirements and obviously the fact that as a society, we've become more focused on nutritional type benefits and fitness and health. It's been kind of a trend across the United States. Not a bad one. The other thing that I noticed that was one of my main observations was that the 2017 benchmark was only 3 pages long when it came to like what was covered and what was not covered. It's now 10 pages. So they've added a lot more detail. So there's a lot more line by line items that are articulated and much more specifically than they were back in 2017. In 2017, it was kind of very high level, broad categories. Now they go into a lot more details. And that's the other thing that I found neat. At one point in time, you couldn't find all the history of the old benchmarks on the internet. Now they're all there. If you go to the CMS website regarding essential health benefits, you can see all the benchmarks for all the years. The ones that are on the main page are the current ones, but there are links throughout the different parts of the page that will take you back to the old benefits. So you can look at the different version histories, which I thought was actually pretty neat. So lots of information out there, but obviously the moral of the story is if you need help dissecting and understanding these or comparing one year's benchmark to another benchmark or reevaluating those, that's something that FIA can help with. And it's something that we obviously recommend when you're looking at your benchmarks and when you're looking at your plans. We suggest an annual review and potential revising of your plan on an annual basis. This is also one of those things that needs to be included in that review, is a review of your benchmark, where you're at, and making sure that it's still accurate based on the benchmark you picked. And if you need to adjust based on where you have your dollar limits. So lots of good stuff. Again, it's one of those FAQs that kind of started the hamster spinning the wheel to figure out where they're going with this. Unfortunately, as usual, we are still awaiting more guidance as to how it specifically impacts the self-funded plans. But at this point in time, I think the moral of the story is start planning, because this rule is coming in some version. And it's something that we need to be prepared for as we, are almost somehow halfway through 2024.
I think that's good advice. Obviously, this isn't necessarily the most exciting topic in the world to talk about, but it's certainly very important. And as Kelly stated, if you need help navigating this process, certainly reach out to FIA and we can help. And Kelly, I would love to sit here and talk about essential health benefits for the rest of the day, but the Red Sox are going to be playing soon. I need some baseball in my life, so I think I'm going to have to sign off and go watch. But it's been a pleasure speaking with you, as always. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great to talk to you today, too, about essential health benefits. I hope you learned something as well as our listeners as well.